John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. Over the past decade or so, we've seen an increase in dangerous sexual behavior among our youth, including sexual assault. My guest this hour was in college when he found out that his own sister had been raped. That experience led him to dedicate his life to helping to ensure that no one else had to go through the pain his sister had experienced. He founded Date Safe and began the Can I Kiss You program, which have both reached millions of people around the world teaching about healthy relationships. Mike Domish is executive director at the Date Safe Project, Incorporated. Mike, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Thanks for having me on, John.
So let's talk about how big a problem we're looking at here when we talk about sexual assault. How bad is this problem today?
Well, actually, a way to look at it, a lot of times when people hear statistics, they hear that 1 in 4 women will be sexually assaulted in college, as sometimes you'll see statistics that even show by the age of 18 or by 20. And then you'll see numbers from 1 to 6 to 1 to 8 males will experience sometimes in their lifetime. What I always like to do is actually step away from the statistics and apply a little common sense. Sexual assault is defined as any sexual contact without consent. If you brought in 100 college students into a room who have been sexually active, and you said, how many of you have had a partner sexually touch you when you did not want it? Now, maybe you said stop, and they stopped, but they had already touched you without your permission, without your consent, against your will. How many of the 100 will say, well, duh, of course that's happened to me? Students say overwhelmingly, over 90% of them are going to say, of course that's happened to me. It's just we don't talk about that when we talk about sexual assault. We only typically talk about the case that makes the news, the case that makes the TV or the newspapers, and we forget the culture that we're discussing is this idea that people just try to do things with people's body without their permission, and that's where the whole problem starts.
So it's easier to ask for permission or for forgiveness than permission, or what's happening in the culture that's causing this?
Well, and it's always been there. So one of the things that's happened is now we're hearing statistics where people say this many sexual assaults are occurring and there's an increased number being reported. So people think, oh my gosh, what's going on with this generation that there's so much sexual assault taking place? Well, that's not actually what's happening. What's happening is there is so much more education out there now. There are so many more places for survivors to go for support that more survivors feel safer, comfortable, more supported coming forward. So there's not actually – we have no signs that there's an increase in sexual assault. We have a sign that there's more reports because survivors feel safer. So the first thing we want to understand is this culture we're referring to has always been present, this idea of I'm going to go for it on somebody's body without their permission. And the idea is in the past people would think, well, they can stop me if they don't want it. Well, the problem with that is it's their body. They have a right to have a choice before you do something with them. They shouldn't have to use self-defense methodology, you know, or theory to think, I'm going to stop you, and that's when my boundaries are going to be respected. No, you should stop before you ever break my boundaries, before you ever do something I don't want done, and make sure I want it done. Ask the question before you do it.
So this is, this is pervasive in our culture, and it seems then, since that's the case, it's going to take a pretty massive effort to kind of retrain ourselves to have a different mindset, and that's exactly what you're setting out to do with the Date Safe Project and the Can I Kiss You program. Talk a little bit about the origins of that. You, your sister went through a traumatic experience being raped, and that got you started on this path. How did you get to where we are today with Date Safe?
Well, what happened was a little while after my sister's assault, I was a college student at the time, and I heard a speaker. I was attending UW-Whitewater at the time, and a speaker came in. A speaker was actually from Madison, and Joseph Weinberg. And he had come in and spoke to the athletes, and I was an athlete at Whitewater. And while he was speaking, I realized, hey, you know what, I could use all this anger I have about what happened to my sister and try to do something about it and speak out. And I went to him. Now, this was back in 1990, 91, and said, I'd like to start speaking out on this. And he was great, gave me tons of great information. And from there, I designed a program and started working in local high schools and middle schools while I was a college student. So that's really where it started to take off. And then people would actually come to us in school and say, hey, this is a unique approach. Nobody else has taken this approach. Will you share this with our students? And that's really, really gained momentum. But those first 8-9 years, it took a long time because society didn't want to talk about these issues. So it wasn't really gaining momentum on a large level. In the 2000s, our universities started saying, hey, we need to be more assertive in addressing this issue. And they jumped on the approach and the strategies that we share and said, can you come and get this to our students? And that's when it really started to take off. That's when I came back into the work full time. The DateSafe project was created in 2003, and it's really taken off from that. And then we started working with the military in the mid-2000s, and that's taken off. So we're very grateful because we're working on all different levels to try to bring down sexual violence and increase respect.
So what are the basic elements that what makes your program and your message different from what we're hearing elsewhere?
Well, typically when you hear about these topics, it's one of two messages. And this is whether it's from a parent or from a school or any educational source. It tends to be telling teenagers or young adults what not to do or what not to get. Well, what not to do is don't get pregnant, don't engage in these behaviors, don't engage in sexual activity. What not to get is, well, if you're going to take these precautions so that you don't get pregnant and you don't have these things, it tends to be one of those two. Well, the problem with that is it's all focused on what not to do, including the message that some people just go out there and say, hey, don't rape. Okay, that's what not to do. What am I supposed to do? So what we come in is we actually give how-to skill sets on how to respect your own boundaries, how to respect your partner's boundaries, how to have a verbal skill set that you can always turn to make sure that you know how you feel, how your partner feels, that you both want what's about to have happen occur. And that's really the key. We're going to come in and give you how-to skill sets, whether it's for a parent on how to talk to their children, whether it's for a teenager on how to have a respectful relationship, or whether it's for a 55-year-old leader in our military on how to be able to have a more respectful relationship with their partner at home and or to lead their troops.
800-642-1234 is the number to call if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment. 800-642-1234. You can also send an email. The address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And you can find the Kathleen Dunn Show on Facebook and put a comment or question there. Three ways to get in touch today. Please feel free, 800-642-1234. For you listeners, some questions. Maybe you can answer these or just comment. What can parents look for regarding how a campus addresses things like sexual assault? And so if we really want to lower sexual assault on college campuses, we need you to educate the young on respect and boundaries. So how do we do that? And how can you as parents help in that effort? And then if you've got teenage boys at home, what are you telling them? 800-642-1234. Mike Domish, what should parents be talking to their children about? Not just boys, but girls. And, well, before we get to that, I guess one of the things here we're talking about, we know that sexual activity is occurring in an increasingly younger cohort, or at least it's being reported. Maybe that's, again, a product of reporting. But if I compare what my own experience was a generation ago, going through all of this stuff, and the massive amount of ignorance that we all had, not only about each other, but about our own selves. What do we know about the kind of sexual activity that's taking place and what children know, when they know it, and what they really should know? What are parents supposed to be doing here?
Well, John, it's a great question, and you brought up a great point right there about ignorance. And it's one of the most dangerous things that can happen to our children is for them to be ignorant about their sexual boundaries, about their ability to make a sexual choice, and about being able to be respected for themselves and respect their partners. And the problem in the past is that generations ago, parents didn't really typically sit down with their teenager and have an open, healthy conversation on sexual decision-making. And so then our next set of parents had never gotten that, so they didn't have a role model to give that to their children, and that's still true today for many parents. They struggle with this because they're afraid, well, if I say too much, maybe it's going to entice them to be intrigued by sexual activity. Well, here's the fact. If you actually give them more detail, it helps sex be less exciting, and it's more of a, here's the details, here's what you need to know. And the more that somebody has an education, the more they're likely to make good choices. Right? We don't tell kids in any other realm of their life, hey, you know what, we're going to limit your intelligence because we don't want you to be too smart about that. We don't do that in school, and we don't want to do that with sexual decision-making. So one thing we want to tell every parent out there is really step back and ask yourself, am I giving my children enough education on this topic? Am I talking to them one-on-one in a way that they can actually talk back with me? I'm not telling them what to do. I'm not telling them what not to do. I'm engaging in a conversation. I'm learning what they know so that I can give them more information or catch if they have misconceptions that could be dangerous. That's really the starting point, engaging versus lecturing.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's always just it's a terribly awkward conversation for a parent to have, and there's a great deal of discomfort there. What suggestions, and not just for them, but for children as well? I mean, children don't like to think about the fact that their parents had to have had sex at least once.
Yeah, well,
how do you get through that? How do you get past that?
Well, here's a big mistake that sometimes parents make, and they think that, well, I'm going to tell my kids about my experiences. That way they can relate to me. Well, that doesn't actually necessarily help them relate to you. What it does is it lets them hear what you did and then think, well, it worked out for you. You might have told me it was a mistake, but you look like everything's turned out okay. So the child uses that as validation to make the same mistakes. So one of the things we always warn parents about is be careful about saying, when I was your age, here's what I did and here's what I discovered. That's also putting your life onto your children's, and they're going to have their own. So instead of doing that, what you want to do is say, all right, when I was a teenager, here are things we saw happen. Now, it might be your own experiences, some of the things you saw happen. It might be some of your friends. But you don't make it an I statement, because that does make it more awkward, and it puts more pressure on the kid to feel like they have to live a life like you lived, or they have to live a life the opposite of what you lived by the way you're teaching. And they need to have their own discovery points. They need to learn for themselves so they gain more true competence of decision-making for themselves versus based on what you, the parent, have taught them.
800-642-1234. We're starting to get some calls, and we'll take those in just a moment. This might be a good time to break, and then when we come back, we'll have some callers give their take on this. So what's been your experience if you're a parent? What did you tell your children? What do you tell your children? If you're in the military, what are you seeing there? If you're someone who works in a school, what are you seeing students doing? What's the discussion like? What do you think we should be doing? Is there a policy issue here that maybe could be addressed at some point? And what? How do you look at this problem? What do you think should be done? And maybe you've got questions for Mike Domish about the Date Safe Project or Can I Kiss You? And we'll be continuing to discuss this throughout the rest of the hour. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with more with Mike Domish and your phone calls at 800-642-1234 in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Kathleen Dunn Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Kathleen Dunn Show. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen this week. This hour, we're talking with Mike Domish, Executive Director at the DateSafe Project, who founded DateSafe and began the Can I Kiss You program. Both have reached millions of people around the world teaching about healthy relationships. We have callers who want to join us on the program. Let's start in Racine, where Fenn is with us. Fenn, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me. I just wanted to comment. I am in the military, and I do work with children, too. So I'm going into high schools, and I see all this inappropriate behavior. And so I think what Mike was saying is very true. And so, you know, it's the upbringing. You have to, you know, talk to your children. Don't just say, don't do this. That's how I grew up. And that made me go say, well, why not? You know, so I just think it's very key for effective communication and to let children know, even and adults, you know, what is appropriate behavior? Because we're in a society now where it's kind of like in this gray area of, you know, it's okay to be inappropriate, and some kids don't know what inappropriate is. And being in the military, I'm surprised that I haven't heard Mike's name before, but he said he started working with the military in the mid-2000s, and I saw a switch, and I've been in the military for over 15 years, so I saw a switch in how they were pursuing sexual assault, so I wanted to know if he had any, you know, input with the military on that, because I did see a switch of how they approach the sexual assault within the military. And I also wanted to know, Mike, do you have any books or workshops? Because I would be excited to attend or read a book that you have.
Well, one, thank you for your service. What you're doing for our country is fantastic. It's one of the reasons I always feel grateful to speak with our military. Yes, the military has seen a switch, a drastic one, in the last 8 years, a much more proactive approach. And what they've realized is the old death by PowerPoint of here's what not to do, here's policy and procedure, that's not the most ideal way to educate adults or anyone. And so what they've done is they've come to us over those last few years and said, hey, we want that interactive approach. We want our sailors, our soldiers, our Marines, we want our Air Force members, we want them to actually walk out with a skill set they can implement in their lives today, whether they're 18 years old and single, or whether they're 55 years old and married. They want to catch things that they do that are not respectful, that are not healthy for our culture, whether it be in the military or outside the military. And you know, one of the most unfair parts about the military is that people have this perception that sexual assault in the military is drastically worse than everywhere else. And the reality is that college campuses have about the same numbers as the military does. It's just we don't expect it from our military because we think of those are the people who are supposed to protect and serve. And so that's one of the drastic differences. So that's the first part of your question. The second part, we absolutely have a book that's used by schools around the country and by parents. It's called May I Kiss You, and it's at our website at datesafeproject.org. It's May I Kiss You. It's a very quick, easy read for teenagers and parents, and it's all about this, about setting up boundaries, about understanding what it means to unreliably use body language is what people tend to do. They make the mistake of relying on body language and then takes them through the journey of, okay, get rid of body language and you learn how to use your words, set your boundaries. So it does all that while also speaking about the serious side of sexual assault. As far as workshops, you can also go to our website and see where we're speaking around the country. And we're always thrilled when people want to come out and see the program. So definitely feel free to look there, and we'd love to see you in an audience. And please feel free to come up and say hi, especially being that you serve our country. As I said earlier, it's a great honor.
So how has your message been received by the military?
You know, that's one of the best parts. It's probably one of the most common questions that I hear, John, from people. Like, they're surprised when they hear the military is doing this, and they think, you know, what do they think of that? Is that a tough crowd is what I often get asked. And I always tell people it's the direct opposite. It's a great crowd. They're a great audience because when you come in and you don't try to act like you know it all and you ask them questions so that they're leading the conversation and you're relating to their world and what they're experiencing, they're like, this is great. This is somebody who's listening and engaging versus telling me. And so they're really appreciative. And then you use humor and they're like, oh, my gosh, not only that, but I'm having fun. And then you start to give them solutions they can implement into their life right away. And they're like, hey, I want to try this. I want to go home and try this. Or the next time I'm on a date, I'm going to try asking. And so that's one of the neatest things. The military members will text us at the end of the show and tell us what they're going to use from the show. And reading those texts is truly inspiring because you get literally a list, a five-page list just from one audience saying, I'm going to go home and talk to my wife about our boundaries or what she is comfortable with or not comfortable with. I'm going to stop making assumptions. Another will say, I'm going to go home and talk to my children about the fact I'm going to be there for them. I'm not going to go out and kill the person who touches them. I'm going to be there for them so that they're able to open the door for the children to come forward. You get another sailor or Marine who says, you know what, I'm going to ask first the next time I'm on a date. My partner deserves to have a choice. And you see all these answers coming in, and you realize they want to do the right thing. Just like our teenagers do, people want to do the right thing. We've just got to give them the skills to be able to do the right thing.
And yet, the message that we get in the popular media from paperback books that you see everywhere to television programs and motion pictures and everywhere, the messages, social media, the messages are kind of conflicted. It would be the politest thing I could say about it. Pretty messed up. In terms of being the opposite of the kinds of things that you're talking about, what can we do to change the dialogue and the messaging?
We have to give people visual experiences to show the opposite of what you're describing, John, because you're correct. Right now, what they're seeing visually in front of them is unhealthy, it's dangerous, it's high risk, it typically is disrespectful behavior. And if that's all your eyes see, your brain that takes in those same visions believes that might be the only way it can be done. Because you've never seen another version. You know, it's like when parents say, do the right thing, but don't tell the children exactly how or give them examples of people doing the right thing. The child might think, well, I'm not going to be the one to do the right thing if nobody else is. I don't know how. See, what we need to do is actually give people actual examples. It's one of the reasons when we go in front of an audience with the Can I Kiss You show, whether it's a military audience or it's a middle school audience, that we always role play scenarios. So we're going to role play with two people on stage, with one of them asking the other for a kiss. Because if I don't do that role play, the audience can agree asking is the right idea, but in their head they'll say, but nobody's going to do it because it's going to be dorky. But the moment you role play it and they see it right in front of them and they go, oh my gosh, that was great. I would love to have somebody ask me like that. Suddenly everything changes because now they have a visual experience that tells them, yes, I can do the right thing. I could be the person in that scene. And it goes against everything they've been taught previously. But because they got to see it, they believe in it on a whole nother level. And so that's what we need to do. We need to be role-playing and giving examples as much as possible to our youth. And there's a few movie scenes where it's happened, where people ask. We just got to point them out. They're not very often, but we got to point them out when they happen. You know, this year one of the top movies is Frozen. And it's an animated movie, but it was a huge hit. And in that movie, there's an asking scene, you know, where somebody asks for a kiss. So you want to highlight that and go, hey, that was considered a little romantic part of the movie, and everybody loved it, and there was an asking. And in real movies, you want to be able to do that. The Notebook had a scene where he asks before they engage in intimacy. He says, I don't want to make you uncomfortable. Are you sure you want to do this? And people loved that scene. Well, then we need to highlight and say, look at that scene, because there's an example of asking that was people loved, thought it was very passionate.
On the other hand,
the more you do that, the more people have a shot at believing in the message.
On the other hand, Grand Theft Auto.
That's correct. And that's why it takes everybody having these conversations for us to truly have a cultural transformation. It takes parents getting involved. It takes schools must care about this issue. You know, often, sadly, some schools think, well, we don't have the time to address issues like sexual assault beyond a health class. Yet they'll talk about drugs and alcohol, and more of their students are likely to be sexually assaulted than to have a crime done against them through the use of alcohol or drugs outside of the crime of sexual assault. And so schools have got to be able to say, this is an important topic that's going to impact our students for the rest of their lives. We need to address this proactively. We need to stop thinking that if we don't talk about it, it won't happen. We need to start giving our students skills. And that's when we're going to start to make this shift. When the paradigm is going to shift is when America says we need to talk about sexual decision-making openly in a healthy, respectful manner, without fear.
Let's take some more calls. We have lines available if you'd like to join us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Connie joins us in Grant County. Connie, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me. Your guest said that, you know, this is happening in society, and we are a melting pot of society. Is this happening in all societies throughout the world, or is it an act of anger, some of this sexual assault, or what really is happening?
Connie, it's a great question, and it's happening throughout the world. This is not something that is owned to the United States by any means. And then actually, when it comes to the United States, we're one of the leaders in the world at providing support services for survivors. It is hard to go to almost any other country in the world and find sexual assault crisis centers assigned to every community in their country. That's what we have in the United States. We take this subject seriously. We still have a long ways to go. But in many ways, we lead much of the world in this conversation because it's actually, we can look at other cultures where this is even worse, much worse than it is in the United States. So it is an overall cultural issue throughout our world. Now, there's some exceptions out there, but throughout our world consistently, this is an issue. Once again, because there hasn't been a skill set that's universally taught. The more you have that, and the cultures that do teach that tend to have lower occurrences of sexual violence.
And thanks so much, Connie, for that call. Let's go next to Marty in Douglas County. Marty, thanks for being here today.
Hi, good afternoon. I would just like to suggest we look at the use of the words sexual assault and rape and what kind of power they both have. I know there is actually something we can call sexual assault, that isn't rape, but I think we use sexual assault in place of rape because it's somehow an easier word, they're easier words to hear. But pay attention to your visceral reaction when I say, my neighbor was sexually assaulted, compared to, my neighbor was raped. I think we would really take this awful, appalling problem more seriously if we would just be brave and say rape when that's what we mean.
Well, and it's a great question, and it's a great point. Here's the issue with the word rape and sexual assault. They have different legal meanings. And so we do have to be very careful of where we use one word and where we use the other. For instance, somebody on a date and their partner sexually touches them without their permission, that is a sexual assault. That does not fall under the category of rape legally. And so we need to make sure that when we're educating students, we are helping them understand what is the legal difference between those two. And what people tend to do, the big mistake they make with language, is they use phrases like taking advantage or drunk hookup. And those are actually sexual assaults. But they don't call them that. They call them drunk hookups, or they call them taking advantage of. So nobody even identifies those situations as being wrong. So that's a great example where we can correct language by saying, when somebody says, hey, Jordan took advantage of Aaron on Friday night sexually, well, what they're really describing is Jordan sexually assaulted Aaron Friday night because Aaron was drunk and couldn't give consent. Call it what it is. That was a sexual assault, and it might have been a rape, depending on the circumstances. And when we start changing that language use, we're going to have to recognize how often this is happening, because we are going to hear the words sexual assault and rape so frequently. We cannot miss how important this topic is to be having with people of all ages.
Marty, thanks so much for the call. 800-642-1234. Lines are open right now. 800-642-1234. What do you think about all of this? And what have your own experiences been? Did you have a chat with your children? Or are you planning to? What are you going to tell them? What do you think is important? Those are all great things for us to talk about this hour. Let's go next to James in Sun Prairie. James, thanks for being here today.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'll try to be quick. I feel like we're not, and this is part of the overall conversation that the country's having, is that a lot of times we're not actually focused. I feel like we're focusing on a symptom rather than the actual root cause of the issue of rape and sexual assault. And it really is the way our society as a whole, at least the United States, views sex and the act of sex. It's viewed from a position of embarrassment, women's worth. Women that have sex before marriage are considered sluts, and they're ashamed, and we're afraid to talk about things, and that's why things don't get talked about. And men, sex is a conquest for them. It's an act of dominance by men, you know, and that's the status quo of sex in this country. And if we shifted that to, you know, sex is normal and sex is great and something that everybody should enjoy, we might actually see these communication issues really not solve themselves, but they would become wouldn't be embarrassed about it anymore. You know,
you're 100% correct. And one of the things that we address with people is this exact issue, that we can't really have a cultural transformation that's going to end sexual violence if we're not teaching healthy sexuality. If you don't have something to actually pursue that is good and positive, then you're going to stay doing what you currently do. We have to give people a new way to look at sexuality. In other words, sex is not about getting some. Sex should be, when you engage with it in another person, it should be about two people having a mutually wonderful, amazing experience. And for that to happen, there does have to be respect. There has to be communication. There has to be understanding of likes and dislikes and boundaries. You have to be of legal age. You have to be of sound mind for all of this to take place. And when we start having those discussions, that's going to really enable us to get to the skill set we want every person to have. But he's right that our country has a stigma when it comes to talking about sex. I mean, we've had, you know, people that will say, well, we can't bring this into a high school because if you talk about how to ask for a kiss, kids might want to start having sex, which is an insane concept to think of. Students say the direct opposite. High school students say, if we actually asked before we engaged in intimacy, abstinence would go way up because we would recognize we're not ready yet to be having these conversations. We're extremely uncomfortable with them, and it would have us slow down. and it would give a better goal to go after as far as it being about both people being comfortable wanting it and being something wonderful and special.
800-642-1234. James, thanks for the call. Let's go to Vicki in Ladysmith next. Hi, Vicki.
Hi. I would like to point out that I guess I'd like to hear something, like some comments regarding the difference between a bad sexual experience, a consensual sexual experience that ends up being bad, it doesn't feel good, and wasn't satisfactory, versus rape on a campus with younger people.
Well, there's a huge difference in a second. So, Vicki, I'm glad you asked this, because sometimes people misunderstand regretted sex as sexual assault. Now, let me explain what regretful sex would be. That means that two people who were of sound mind, who were of legal age, decided with each other they were going to engage in sexual activity. Afterwards, they realized that wasn't that great. We weren't really in the mood. Why do we do that? I really regret making that decision. But they made the decision knowingly, willingly, and of sound mind, and they thought at the time, well, I want this. So that's regretting it. By the way, married couples do that. Okay, so that's regretting it. However, the difference in sexual assault is when you didn't give consent. That's a massive difference. And one of the things that people used to make the mistake of thinking is they used to think that consent was about no means no. The problem with no means no is it puts all of the responsibility on the person that's actually being touched instead of the person who's actually doing the touching. And so that's one of the big paradigm shifts we've worked with schools to try to create, which is instead of no means no, turn to the person who's doing the touching and say, did you ask? If you didn't ask, how do you know you had consent? Or were you assuming what you could do with somebody else's body? That would be arrogance. That would be an abuse of power. So why don't we just teach people to ask first? And so that's a drastic difference. Being consensual, I said yes, I wanted it, I was of sound mind, versus regretful, you know what, that wasn't that great, wish I hadn't done that. There's a drastic difference there in those two.
Vicki, thanks for the call. We need to take a break here pretty soon, and we have a lot more callers. One of the things, Mike Domish, that I would like you to do is maybe place this conversation a little bit in the context of the situation with Elliot Rodgers and the shootings in Santa Barbara and what came out of that, the Yes All Women hashtag, and that whole discussion, and talk a little bit about that. Put what you're doing in the context of that discussion, the discussion we're having about sexuality and about how we view women in our society, and just to kind of see how that plugs in here. And then we'll take more calls as well after we take a short break. I'm John Munson. We're talking with Mike Domish, founder of the DateSafe Project, and with you if you care to join us at 800-642-1234. You're listening to the Kathleen Dunn Program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Kathleen Dunn Program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn this week. This hour we're talking with Mike Domish, who is the founder of the DateSafe Project. And we're discussing the whole realm of sexual assault and rape and how we treat each other in our culture and how we change the discussion and change our behaviors so that we really do take this problem on and work toward solving it. And we've been having a great discussion with Mike Domish and with our callers. Mike, we had an incident, as everybody knows, in Santa Barbara. Elliot Rodgers was... when you look at his online postings and things like that, very twisted, very sick individual. But certainly there were others who shared his views, who didn't act out on them. But out of that, we got the Yes All Women hashtag, and an entire discussion came about in terms of how we look at women in our society and how we approach this whole thing of sexuality. Place what you're doing in the context of that discussion and how do those things intersect, do you think?
You know, John, this is really an important topic, which is how we treat genders when we talk about sexual decision-making, sexual respect, and boundaries. And one of the biggest mistakes that our country has made, many parents make, is they teach genders differently about sexual decision-making, respect, and boundaries. They'll tell young men things like, be a gentleman, open the door, pay the bill, take care of her, those, and they assume heterosexual. They'll tell young women, be a lady, which means, you know, act a certain way, be proper. The problem with that is then people are filling roles, not being themselves. We teach guys to go for it, and women be the ones who stop him. So then women don't have a voice because they're always waiting for their partner to make a move. It's extremely dangerous, and because we're telling guys to go out and get it and get it and get it, when they don't, you do see that hostility of, well, it's the woman's fault, I'm chasing and they won't ever. It's really messed up, and it's extremely dangerous. So one of the things we want every parent to think about out there is, am I teaching my daughters and my sons about sexual decision-making, gender equality, the same way? Am I teaching my son and my daughter, you should ask if you want to kiss someone. Am I teaching my son and my daughter that sexual, being a sexual person is natural, and it's healthy, and it's positive, and you should feel good about yourself? Now, it takes a lot of things for sexual activity between two people to truly be wonderful. It takes a lot of certain steps, and you want to go over those steps with your kids. But they should be the same steps for males and females, for anyone of any gender. And that's really important to start to knock out this hostility of this opposite gender concept. If it's almost like a battle between genders, it should never be that. It should be two people getting to know each other, their boundaries, what they like, what they don't like, regardless of gender.
Hmm. Let's take a call next from Mel in Greenfield. Mel, thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. John, Mike, I want to thank both of you for having this conversation. John, for hosting it. Mike, for how amazingly well you've handled all of these questions that have been thrown at you. I'm actually a sexual assault victim, rape survivor myself. And it's something that is with me every single day in good and bad ways. One of the good is that I've become really involved in sexual wellness, enthusiastic consent, and in changing these discussions. And I just want to say thank you. Today especially, I really needed to hear someone having positive conversations about consent and sexual decision making, and thank you.
Well, thank you, because every time a survivor like yourself speaks out and says, as a survivor, all of us get to see the strength and the courage that all survivors such as you have, and that is a great role model for everybody out there. So thank you for sharing with us. You know, the reason we do this work is because we're continually inspired by survivors. It started because of my sister's strength and courage, and every day we continue to be inspired by other survivors in the military and schools that we meet. So thank you, Mel.
Mel, thanks for the call. Peter in Stoughton is next. Peter, hello.
Good afternoon. One factor that is prevalent for the younger generation that wasn't around for my generation is the availability of pornography. Now, I'm not anti-porn by any means, but they are going to see it. And so many of the trends in pornography are disrespectful or abusive or whatever you want to call them. But you have a whole generation of kids, male and female, who are learning about intimate relationships via pornography.
Yeah, and John, this is really important. One of the things we talk to, even in some high schools, will say, Mike, will you bring up pornography? Or a student raise their hand and ask about it, and it allows this conversation to take place. Here's what pornography does. Now, there's a lot of statistics and research on whether violence is connected with pornography. I'm going to present a different viewpoint here, and that is this. When a teenager has never seen pornography, and they see their partner for the first time in a sexual situation, for instance, let's say nude, they're so thrilled and excited with the moment they're about to experience. They are so appreciative and grateful of the gift that's in front of them. They are ecstatic. That same 18-year-old, 20-year-old, who has seen pornography for a year, 2 to 3 years, now sees that same partner who they should be grateful for, respectful for, appreciative. Suddenly they see that partner naked, and they say, well, you know, I mean, it's nice, it's great, but it's not. Because their perception has been so warped to what they think the human body looks like, what sexuality is actually like. They think things should happen between two people the way it happens in pornography, and even porn stars say that's not how they engage in intimacy. outside of the film industry. And so the devastating effects is often on expectations, realities, and assumptions that people make based on the pornography they've seen. That becomes extremely unhealthy and, as you said, disrespectful.
Well, and it isn't just porn in terms of those images. You've got in all the popular media. Look at how women's bodies are viewed and criticized. Every time somebody, oh, that person gained 2 pounds, you know, what a cow, whatever.
Well, I mean, here's a great example. Miss Indiana, right? Just made all the news because in the pageant because she didn't have a body that was a stick figure. Now, anybody that saw her, she did wonderful interviews. She still is much smaller than the average female. And people said it was nice to see a larger woman in the pageant compared to the others. She was still like a size 4. And the average woman was more in the size 12 to 16 categories, what they were showing afterwards. But once again, misperceptions. Oh, she's a little bit bigger. Oh, see, bigger. Well, that's not bigger at all. Okay, and that doesn't mean good or bad, whether it's bigger or less or skinny. But that's what they do. They make it bad because they make this the ideal that can be unrealistic for a lot of people. And it could be unhealthy for some people to pursue that.
Let's go next to Max in Grant County. Max, hello.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I would like to address that pornography comment. For some people, I'm sure that's true, but not for all of us. Where if we have seen it, we then look at a female in that situation. That's not always true for all of us in general or somebody of the opposite sex in general. The other thing is, I've been listening on and off for the majority of the hour, and all I've been hearing is everybody's talking about, from what I've been gathering, females being the targets of all of the rapes and the sexual assaults. Well, that's not entirely true. I'm also in the service, as well as the caller that you had earlier, and I didn't catch any more of or all of what she was saying, but there's also instances where males can be raped and sexually assaulted, and I actually graduated high school with a guy who had that happen to him with a female, and I don't think that it's just the males, and I'm not saying that that's what you're saying. It's not just males that are going out and doing that. There are females that will do it.
Well, again, you're bringing up a very important topic. One, again, thank you for your service, and you're bringing up a really important topic and one that we address. We, in our programs, we do not talk about males sexually assaulting females. Our whole program is what's called gender neutral. We have character names that are gender neutral so that everybody can feel like they're one of the characters in the scene, regardless of sexual orientation or gender, because this is an important topic. We have many male survivors of sexual assault. And all survivors deserve respect, honor, and admiration. And it's one of the things that whether we're talking to the military, we're talking to middle schools, when I say the word survivors, I always pause and I go, all survivors, all genders, all sexual orientations deserve our respect and admiration. So you're 100% correct that it is not just females who are survivors. In fact, in our book, Voices of Courage, which we make available for free on our website, that book, we have both male and female survivors represented sharing their stories.
Max, thanks so much for your call today. Appreciate your perspective on this. We're getting down to the end of the program here. I have two calls. I really want to get both of them in. Let's go to Carol in Milwaukee. Carol, I'm going to ask you to be brief. Thank you.
Yes. I think porn is an issue, and also music. So if you don't, I think so, listen to your, put the headphones on and listen to the lyrics of what your kids are listening to after they're sleeping. You'll be just shocked. Anyway, I think if they taught sex education / whatever, early in a child's life, like in first and second grade, like they teach medical students, show them a Grey's Anatomy, then they will come to think of their body in that way. But by the time they're in the fourth and fifth grade and you teach them sex, quote-unquote, education, it's all giggles, and I think it's a bad influence.
Okay, Carol, I'm going to have to let you go there, and a quick response from Mike Domish, and then I have another call I want to get in.
Yep, when the Obama administration came out with the sexual assaults suggestions. We actually wrote a blog saying if you really want to stop sexual assault in colleges, you need to start teaching and talking about it when they're 4, 5, and 6 years old about boundaries, respect of the body, and understanding your body. That's how you reduce it in college, by stopping it before it gets there.
Let's take another call here. This will be Alex in Door County. Alex, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I don't know the ages of all the other callers, but I'm 20 years old, and I can personally say that while I am not a victim, there have been times where, as a male, I've had to say no and actually had females be upset with me for that. So I can agree with Max in that point, that about all the juvenile and gender neutral stuff he explained. But what I really wanted to just say was that I think as a young person in the younger generation that's being referred to here, I really think it's a little more – asking is more prevalent than is being talked about. Yeah, there are the guys that are, you know, 15, 16 that still go out and think it's cool to get some and whatever. But as a 20-year-old and going through high school and college, I know me personally, and I might be the minority, but I know that I've always asked and I've always made sure that it was all right, and all my friends have. And I think it's because the repercussions of a sexual assault charge or a rape charge on your future isn't worth it. Not to mention, it's not worth it in the moment because you can tell that she doesn't enjoy it. You don't really enjoy it. You feel kind of gross. Like you're forcing yourself. I don't know. I feel like it's just a little more prevalent than some people may realize.
Well, and I think it's great you're asking, so that's fantastic. And we do want everybody asking, and you're right. Some people ask, and I'm not saying you were implying this, some people ask because they don't want to get a sexual assault charge. What we want to do is we want to change people from that mindset to, I want to ask because my partner deserves a choice. They always deserve a choice, and I don't ever want to cross those boundaries. And so the more we're getting out there, unfortunately, the numbers show whether you are 14, 16, 25, or 45, most people do not ask first. They might sometimes ask during, but that's already when you're doing something. Most people don't. So by numbers, you're in the minority, but we want to praise that because we want more people doing what you're doing. So thank you.
Alex, thanks so much for the call today. Mike Domish, we're... Where do you want to take this program in the future? You've been doing this now for a long time, and you've had some great success. How do you want to? How do you expect to proceed? What's the future plan for your organization and for the message you're trying to carry?
We want to reach a large societal, broad impact on transforming how we view sexual respect, sexual decision making across our culture. We'll know that things have really changed when you're looking at the late-night talk shows and they're cracking a joke about asking first, because that means everybody in the culture is actually talking about it for the first time. We need to get to that stage. We need our country talking about this and really engaging in the conversation about why don't we teach the verbal skill set and how to ask first before you ever do something with another person's body, sexually or intimately.
So if a school district or an organization would like to have a presentation from the Date Safe Project, how can they go about that? What should they do to get in touch with you?
They've got two great avenues for that. They can go to datesafeproject.org, and that's safe as an F. What we say is you're going to go on a date, you want to feel safe, and you're going to bring in our project to help that out, datesafeproject.org. The other thing you can do is you can call our toll-free number at 800-329-9390, and Rita will be thrilled to help you. She's the one who helps work with all the schools and making this happen, or organizations. And Rita is also my middle sister, so it's a family affair, and we love being able to work with schools, institutions, and organizations in Wisconsin.
Mike Domish, thanks so much for an enlightening hour. I really appreciate your being with us today.
Well, thanks for having us on, John, and for some great questions and conversation.
Mike Domish is the founder of the Date Safe Project, which comes out of Milwaukee. Thanks to KP Whaley, who produced this hour of programming, on-air production from Dave Potratz and Marika Suval. Coming up tomorrow at this time, U.S. Military troops, or rather at this time, my guest tomorrow is Bill White, former mayor of Houston and deputy secretary of energy under President Clinton. He's just published a book, America's Fiscal Constitution. We'll be talking about that tomorrow afternoon at 2. Tomorrow at 1, we'll be talking about Iraq. U.S. military troops have been deployed to Iraq to protect the embassy in Baghdad. And we're going to talk about what's going on there at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. It's been a great day on the Kathleen Dunn program. Kathleen will be back next week. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn, reminding you that you're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.